tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 13th of April 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I hope everybody had a good weekend. I had an excellent weekend meeting up with the Patriotic Alternative Music Club, which is a group of musicians. There was seven of us in all, writing new songs together, practicing old songs and rehearsing for the Patriotic Alternative Family Camp, which will be going on in the summer. If you wish to attend that, you'll find the details on the Patriotic Alternative website, patrioticalternative.org.uk. And I must say, the standard of musicianship was excellent. So a lot of fun was had, and I look forward to the next meeting of the PA Music Club. Well, that's something positive to start the show with. We now have something negative, rather unfortunately. It looks like Viktor Orban has lost the Hungarian elections, which I am surprised at. You'll probably remember a couple of weeks ago we highlighted all the shenanigans that were going on in the Hungarian elections and how the European Union were attempting to meddle with them. But it does look like Viktor Orban has conceded that he lost this election. He doesn't appear to be challenging it. So let's have a look and see what's being said about this. This article comes from Breitbart. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban conceded defeat in the parliamentary elections on Sunday, bringing an end to 16 years of governance in Budapest. Following a hotly contested campaign against his rival, Member of European Parliament Peter Magyar, and his upstart Tisza party, a record turnout of over three quarters of voters decided to turn the page from Viktor Orban's Fidesz party, which had ruled the country since 2010. Now, that's quite a good turnout. It was an exceptional turnout, really, three quarters of the country. I don't think we even managed to do that in Britain for the Brexit vote. I think that was only 60% of the country. Some people might say, well, it's good to have a change after 16 years. But at the same time, after 16 years, you have somebody who knows the ropes, knows how the job works, knows how to do the job. This is why they say in Russia, why would we want to change from President Putin? He knows what he's doing. He's been doing the job long enough to know exactly how to do it. And perhaps Viktor Orban would like to have a bit of a rest after 16 years of continuous governance. I mean, it has to be really hard work thinking about these things all day long, probably only getting about 4 hours sleep. You're just going to be on edge the whole time, I should imagine. It'd probably take years off somebody's life being a prime minister, being a good prime minister for a certain amount of time because of all the work that's involved. So perhaps he's just looking forward to having a bit of a rest and spending some time with his lovely grandchildren. With over two-thirds of the votes counted, Tisza held a lead of 53% to 37%, according to Magyar Nemzet, likely paving the way for a governing majority in Parliament. And I'm surprised at that. I thought it would be closer. Again, perhaps that's the reason why he's conceding defeat, 53% to 37%. That's quite a clear majority for the former opposition party. It will not be the first time Orban has been sent to the opposition benches. Despite persistent claims of being a faux dictator, Orban accepted his first defeat in 2002 after serving 4 years as prime minister before coming back to power 8 years later. And originally, Orban was pictured during the revolt, basically, against the Soviet rule. He played quite an important part in that revolt. And that's why people have said that he's really genuine, because they knew him from this revolution, effectively, that got rid of Soviet power. So he's been in power before. He's lost power. And now he's been back in power again. And now he's lost power again. Conceding defeat on Sunday evening, Orban said, "The election result is painful for us, but understandable. I congratulated the Tizhia party. No matter how it turned out, we in the opposition will serve our country and the Hungarian nation," he declared, adding, "We never give up." For his part, Magyar said that Hungary made history on Sunday and that his victory means that his party has the authority to build a functional and humane homeland for all Hungarians. And I'm always suspicious when they say things like all British or all Hungarians, all French people, because it inevitably seems to mean people that aren't actually ethnically Hungarian. It seems to mean people that are from other ethnic groups. Or it means LGBTQ, or it might mean Muslims, but it doesn't actually mean Hungarians. It seems to be a sort of code word for that when these politicians say they're speaking for all Hungarians. The issue of the Ukraine war played a central role in the election, with Orban accusing his rival of being a Brussels puppet and a pro-Zelensky partisan who would fast-track Kiev's accession into the European Union. And also, I mean, if I was Hungarian, I'd be very concerned about this pro-Zelensky partisan, because it means that they might stop buying Russia's cheap gas and oil. I mean, Hungary has a deal with Russia so that they can still get the cheap oil that and the cheap gas that the rest of Europe were getting before this incident happened in Ukraine. And if this new politician, Magyar, is against against that and doesn't put Hungary first and puts the EU first, then it means that it could tank Hungary's economy, having to pay twice as much for their fuel. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I'm surprised that so many people voted against it. Orban argued that this would drag Hungary into the war and endanger its supplies of Russian energy, which have been critical to keeping consumer costs down in the landlocked country. Orban also warned that allowing Ukraine into the European Union would be devastating for Hungarian industry, particularly farmers, who would face steep competition from their neighbours to the east, who have much lower wages. So you can see that there are genuine reasons for why Viktor Orban was against all this help for Ukraine and why he was accused of being pro-Putin. I mean, it was because he was putting the Hungarian people first for the cheap energy, and also putting his farmers first, something which the rest of the European Union could really learn from, I think, Hungary putting their farmers first. Magyar has claimed he would not vote to fast-track Ukraine's EU membership, and in turn has attempted to portray Orban and his party as beholden to Russia. Well, note that he doesn't say anything there about turning down the cheap Russian oil. He's not ruling that out, is he? He's just saying that he wouldn't vote to fast-track Ukraine to the EU. Competing scandals in the final days of the campaign sought to validate both claims, with recordings emerging of Orban's foreign minister Peter Szijjarto allegedly passing on EU classified information to Moscow's top diplomat Sergei Lavrov, which Magyar described as potentially treasonous. And this is what we covered in the podcast with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. We were saying, well, it's not uncommon for foreign secretaries to talk to foreign diplomats, is it really? What is the classified information? Nobody's actually said that it's classified information. They just said that he was actually just talking to Sergei Lavrov about things that were publicly available. Meanwhile, Serbian and Hungarian officials claimed to have disrupted an alleged attempt to bomb the Turkish Stream gas pipeline near the Hungarian border just days ahead of the vote. Orban implied that the attempted attack was of Ukrainian origin and suggested that it was seeking to empower his rival. All this stuff about blowing up pipelines. I mean, we're expected to believe that Russia intended to blow up its own pipeline that was providing the Nord Stream gas to Germany. We've just had the head of British intelligence saying, "Oh, we see you, Putin, looking at our pipelines." Well, I can imagine that Putin would actually feel justified in blowing up a pipeline that supplies the West, because his pipeline was blown up. And we're expected to believe this ridiculous nonsense that Russia blew up its own pipeline. And what we see here is what was very likely the Ukrainians trying to bomb the pipeline that goes into Hungary. And Zelensky was making threats to Orban, threatening to what would he do if Ukrainian commandos got hold of him, and all things like this, for refusing to allow a vote to go through to essentially give Zelensky a load more money. Even prior to the war in Ukraine, Orban has been at odds with the globalist woke faction in Europe, having made it his government's mission to confront plunging birth rates with pro-family policies, such as tax incentives for mothers having more children, rather than using immigration to bolster population figures, which is, of course, what replacement migration is. They try and say that replacement theory is a conspiracy theory, but the facts are we're not producing enough children to replace ourselves. And the United Nations came up with this idea of replacing the non-existent white people with the overpopulated Africa's people. Effectively, that's what replacement migration is. It's because we are not producing enough of our own white children. Well, what Orban did was he brought in policies to encourage Hungarians to produce children, tax incentives for people to remain married, tax incentives for people to have as many children as possible. And this is the correct way to deal with this. And he even said that if they were to do what the European Union does, then Hungary would no longer be Hungary within another 50 years, because it wouldn't be full of Hungarians anymore. You know, they used to say that the reason why the Greek civilization fell is because Athens was suddenly no longer full of Athenians anymore. There weren't any more Athenians in Athens. You know, this is a problem that's gone on for millennia, effectively, replacing one population with another, and then the civilization collapses. The long-time Hungarian leader has been a consistent critic of open borders advocates and put himself forward as the top opponent to former German Chancellor Angela Merkel in 2015 when she unilaterally opened Europe's borders to mass migration from the Middle East and Africa. Indeed, she opened up Germany's borders to 1 million refugees. Orban's government had also faced financial sanctions from Brussels over conservative legislation barring LGBTQ content from being shown on children's television, and officially banning pride parades, given that they often feature public displays of sexually explicit scenes. So yeah, it's not about hating gay people, it's about not wanting to subject children to sexually explicit scenes. That's the reason why gay pride is frowned upon. And I can recall doing a podcast a couple of months back about somebody who went to gay pride and they had all these sex toys that were available there that children could just see. And of course, if you complain about that, you'll be accused of being homophobic. You know, none of this is about hate. It's all about showing concern for your own people. However, despite foreign observers often accusing Orban of having been a dictator, the Budapest Pride Parade went ahead this year in defiance of the ban. So they weren't all thrown off the top of buildings then for having the gay pride parade. However, the government's reputation on such issues was severely damaged after it was revealed in 2024 that then-Hungarian President Katalin Novak had pardoned the ex-deputy director of the Kossuth Zsuzsa Children's Home after being convicted of helping cover up child sex abuse by his boss. The scandal led Magyar to break from Orban's party and join Tisza. And I seem to recall what went on there. He didn't actually, something like he didn't actually know about the child abuse, but he effectively covered it up. What was going on there, we don't know. obviously corruption, effectively. So, I mean, that is going to hit his party hard. And that has always been the accusation against the Fidesz party, is that there was a lot of corruption. I can recall we did a podcast many years ago with a Hungarian listener, and he was very anti-Orban. And the reason why he was anti-Orban is because of all this corruption. All these licenses were going out to Orban's buddies, basically, for tobacco stores, and all these other government contracts were all going to his buddies. And that was his main criticism. But of course, the way that we tend to look at it is, well, what you're really saying is the grass is always greener over there rather than in your own field. Because if you look at it objectively, even if Orban did have a bit of corruption there and was giving these contracts out to people that were associates of his, the fact that he was encouraging the birth rates and standing strong against mass immigration from non-white peoples, standing strong, supporting Christian civilization, and protecting the children from being sexualized at a young age, I think all of that outweighs the fact that there was a bit of corruption. But if you actually live in Hungary, then you may not see that, because you're seeing everything so close up. You may not actually see the wood for the trees, as they say. The campaign for Orban's Fidesz was further complicated by a struggling national economy, which had suffered some of the highest inflation in Europe in the wake of the energy crisis sparked by the Ukraine war. This was unfortunately compounded by one of the worst droughts on record in 2022. So despite still being able to get hold of this low-priced gas and fuel, they still had inflation. So imagine what it would be like now if this new President Magyar goes along with the EU and puts sanctions on itself for using Russian fuel. Imagine what will happen then. Hungary's economic woes were also in part as a result of sanctions levied by the European Union, in part over its supposed homophobic laws and refusal to take in alleged asylum seekers. Again, it's not exactly accurate, is it? Homophobic? I mean, they put it to a vote. They had a public referendum. Do you want your children to be taught about transgender issues and homosexual issues under the age of 16? And the result of the referendum was an overwhelming support for saying, no, we don't want our children to be taught this. We want to teach them about it ourselves. That was the second part of it. It said, do you want the state to teach your children about this, or do you want to teach about it yourself as parents? And the overwhelming number of votes were saying that we, as our parents, we would prefer to teach our own children about this. So how can that be considered homophobic? That's democratic. They've asked the people to vote on this, and the people returned their vote on this, and yet Hungary was then sanctioned for doing this and accused of being homophobic, when in actual fact all it was doing is being democratic, a lot more democratic than a lot of countries in the European Union that refuse to hold referendums or refuse to honour the results of the referendums. In the days leading up to the vote in Hungary, Republicans in Washington accused the European Commission of having interfered in the election. And that's what we were talking about a couple of weeks back. Through economic pressure, the funding of opposition media and activist groups, and these are NGOs, and digital censorship, banning articles which made the Tisza party look bad, and only allowing articles which made the Fidesz party look bad. That's the sort of thing that was going on there, as I say, and this promoting of these NGOs. The same sort of game that gets played in places like Belarus. And I must remind people, there was a fantastic BBC interview with President Lukashenko from Belarus, when he listed the names of some of these NGOs that he had actually banned from Belarus. Some of them were absolutely ridiculous, things like the Disabled Dogs Charity. And he was saying that with all this money that was given to it, and he was saying the only reason that that is in the country is in order to encourage people to get rid of Lukashenko. And that's the way that these NGOs work. They call them non-governmental organizations. And what that actually means is that they are, they promote what the government wants them to promote, but there is a sufficient distance between them for the government to pretend that that's not actually what they're for, but they're funded by the government. So how can they say they're a non-governmental organization when they actually receive their funding from the government? Such accusations were also made by the US Vice President J.D. Vance, who said this week that the EU's actions represented one of the worst examples of foreign and election interference he had ever seen. Again, this is why I'm surprised that Viktor Orban has conceded defeat, really. Regardless, Orban's loss in Hungary will represent a significant blow to the Trump administration and to the international populist movement. Well, I think the biggest blow to the international populist movement has been Trump's invasion of Iran, to be honest. I think that's really harmed the populist movement in a big way, because the populist movement does not support that. And it's effectively saying if you have a populist politician who gets voted in, they're not going to do what they promised to do, which really says that these populist politicians are no different to the mainstream left-wing politicians. In fact, what it really shows you is that the only people that have not actually been in power, which is the ethno-nationalists, they're the last ones to that haven't actually been shown that they're corrupted. You know, the head of the populist movement, Trump, he's corrupt. And he's not putting America first, he's putting Iran first, and obviously Israel first, rather. And that's clearly what all the politicians did before him. But we haven't actually had any ethno-nationalist politicians yet. And we'll see whether they are corrupt, whether they were to start suddenly putting Israel first. Would Rupert Lowe start putting Israel first once he got into power? Or do you think Rupert Lowe would keep his promises? I'm of the belief that Rupert Lowe would probably keep his promises. I don't see him as anti-Israel in any way, but he has signaled that his support would be for the British people first and foremost. He doesn't support this war in Iran. He's also more concerned about animal welfare rather than allowing religious slaughter, kosher slaughter and halal slaughter. He would ban both of those as well. So that's, I would say that the Jews might say that that's anti-Semitic because it's stopping them from slaughtering animals in the way that they wish to slaughter them. But I don't think Rupert Lowe sees it as anti-Semitic. I think he sees it as an animal welfare issue, which is correct. So from what I see of Rupert Lowe, I don't think he would go back on any of the things that he has that he said. And to be honest, with Donald Trump, I mean, he has always been supportive of Israel. And I think I even said on the New Year's Eve stream when I was saying, well, one of the best things about last year was the Trump administration and all the pro-white policies and all the pro-white memes and texts that the administration were sending out. And then I was asked, well, what do you think could be negative about the new year? And I said, well, it's going to be the Trump administration again, because unfortunately, I think he's going to go to war in Iran. And of course, 2 months later, that's exactly what he has done. As I say, I think that's been more of a blow to populism than anything else. Continuing here, he says, a significant blow to the Trump administration and to the international populist movement, which had been fostered in large part in Hungary, with Orban frequently hosting conferences such as the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC. I seem to remember that Richard Spencer tried to hold a conference in Hungary and they ended up being arrested and not being allowed in. So perhaps Orban is not quite so supportive of conservative political action as he makes out here. His loss was instantly hailed by globalists in Brussels, with longtime opponent, unelected EU chief Ursula von der Leyen saying, "Hungary has chosen Europe." Well, that's not good, is it? Because Hungary should really be choosing Hungary. She said, "Hungary has chosen Europe. Europe has always chosen Hungary." Yeah, chosen Hungary to subvert. "Together we are stronger. A country reclaims its European path and the Union grows stronger. Well, it's not European, is it? Because the European Union would like to allow Turkey in there. Turkey aren't actually Europeans. It's a financial grouping. And they talk about it's reclaiming its European path. It's not reclaiming its European path. It's opting for closer financial union with the financial organization that basically governs the European Union. That's what's going on there. Well, it may be that Viktor Orban has accepted this, but that's not necessarily so for the United States. Republican lawmakers in the United States have accused the European Union of intervening to subvert Hungary's democratic process, putting its thumb on the scale against Prime Minister Viktor Orban as he seeks re-election on Sunday. This article was from the day before the election, I think. New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith and Maryland Representative Andy Harris wrote to European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, who controls the unelected federal branch of the European Union, accusing Brussels of using its financial and other powers to pressure Hungarian voters into backing a more pro-EU government. And as I say, we covered this a couple of weeks back, and it does seem as if that has actually won the election for the opposition, because they had all this support from the European Union there, which is foreign meddling, basically. It's foreign meddling when Russia does it, but it's democratic when the European Union does it. It comes as Prime Minister Orban faces his toughest re-election campaign since coming to power 16 years ago, and economic difficulties stemming in large part from the war in neighbouring Ukraine and from financial sanctions imposed by the European Union on Hungary over so-called rule of law violations, which is basically not allowing mass immigration and not allowing homosexual propaganda to the kiddies. In total, the European Union is currently withholding around 18 billion euros in funds from Hungary, including for domestic legislation restricting the promotion of LGBTQ content on children's television, and for barring lewd public demonstrations. Imagine that. They're holding this money because Hungary refuses to allow lewd public demonstrations, such as gay pride parades. Hungary is also facing the prospect of hefty fines for refusing to take in illegal migrants from other European Union countries, which Budapest has argued is a punishment for having secured its own borders while others failed or refused to. And that's a good argument, isn't it? Hungary has protected itself from this, so why should Hungary have to accept it when these other countries in the European Union that are trying to get rid of these migrants, they didn't protect their borders. They put these migrants up in hotels, for instance. Republican Representatives Smith and Harris said that the EU's persistence and timing of these measures, particularly during an electoral period, have reinforced perceptions that they are being applied in a politically selective manner. This perception is strengthened by the case of Poland, in which the European Union put similar pressures against a conservative government and then cynically dropped its pressures entirely as soon as a progressive government was in power in Poland, without that government having made the rule of law changes that the EU had previously demanded. So we have to see if that happens in Hungary now, whether they drop all of these sanctions and withholding of money to Hungary. The cumulative effect is to create the appearance that European Union institutions seek to strongly shape the political environment of a member state during a democratic election, they wrote. And as I say, how can that be democratic for an outside organisation outside of the country seek to influence the political environment of another country? That's meddling in elections. Congressmen Smith and Harris also raised the issue of EU funding to media, activist organisations and NGOs within Hungary, which they noted are broadly understood within Hungary to be acting in opposition to the Orbán government. Imagine that they were holding money from the European Union, from Hungary itself, but they're actually sending out loads of money to NGOs within Hungary for them to speak out against Orban and subvert Hungary effectively. During an electoral period, the effect of these funding patterns is not merely abstract. Rather, they contribute in concrete ways to shaping the informational environment in which voters form their judgments. This has led to a widespread perception that EU institutions are active and partisan participants in Hungary's domestic politics, they said. The Republican lawmakers also raised the issue of the EU's Digital Services Act censorship apparatus, which demands that large social media companies police so-called disinformation and hate speech on their platforms. Smith and Harris said that officials and commentators in Hungary have claimed that the Digital Services Act has been used to stifle or censor viewpoints in favour of the Orbán government. And of course it would have done, because the EU will say it's disinformation to say that if you have a load of illegal immigrants in your country, that it's going to increase the crime rate and increase your problems. And they don't want people to be saying that. They will accuse you of hate speech for saying that. They even said in the United Nations Migration Compact a couple of years back that everybody who signed up to this compact would then make it incitement to hate, criticism of migration and migration status. They all signed up to saying that they will add migration to the protected characteristics. And protected characteristics are things like race, ethnicity, disability, age, gender, and they wanted to add migration status to it as well, which would admit, and migration is a government policy. So they're effectively wanting to make criticism of a government policy into hate speech. And that's what they'll be doing here when they use the Digital Services Act. And they say, well, we want you to take down this post because it's disinformation and hate speech. The resulting dynamic raises grave concerns about indirect censorship, particularly where private platforms act under regulatory pressure to suppress or limit certain forms of political speech, they wrote. Taken together, the US congressmen said that the EU's actions constitute a pattern of direct and indirect intervention in Hungary's internal political, media and civil society environment during an active electoral period. In assuming a role that is widely perceived within Hungary as aligned with particular political outcomes, the European Union risks undermining confidence in its institutional neutrality and its respect for the sovereign democratic processes of its member states. Well, I really don't think the EU cares about that. All it cares about is results. It doesn't care about the way that it's actually perceived. I mean, if there's a referendum that votes against it, and most votes against something such as gay marriage, they would just ignore the result of the referendum. If the people vote to actually leave the European Union, then they will work with the politicians of that country to make sure that the deal punishes that country for leaving. I really don't think they care about how they're perceived, as well as they know that they hold the purse strings to a lot of these media companies and left-wing journalists, and they can just get them to write puff pieces about them, can't they? So that they're not concerned about the way that they're seen. Quite clearly, they're not concerned about it looking like they're meddling in elections, because there won't be anybody on the mainstream media actually accusing them of meddling in these elections. You know, that's just reserved for Russia. They're the primary election meddlers. They called on the Commission to provide a full accounting of its funding of media and other organisations in Hungary, transparency on its sanctioned decision-making process, actions taken under the Digital Services Act, and to divulge what steps Brussels has taken to ensure political neutrality in European Union member state elections. The letter from the congressmen comes days after US Vice President J.D. Vance similarly accused Brussels of interfering in Hungary's elections as he travelled to Budapest in a show of support for the longtime ally of President Donald Trump. Vance said that the economic pressure imposed on the Hungarian public by the European Union represented, quote, one of the worst examples of foreign and election interference, close quote, he had ever seen. The bureaucrats in Brussels have tried to destroy the economy of Hungary. They have tried to make Hungary less energy independent. They have tried to drive up costs for Hungarian consumers. And they have done it all because they hate this guy, Vance said of Prime Minister Orbán. In an apparent attempt to act as a counterweight to the European Union, President Trump said on Friday evening that the US is prepared to use its economic might to help strengthen the Hungarian economy, if called upon. We are excited to invest in the future prosperity that will be generated by Orbán's continued leadership, the president wrote on Truth Social. Well, I have to admit, I mean, that's, isn't that, couldn't that be seen as meddling in elections as well, to be saying to the Hungarians, we recommend that you vote for Orbán and we'll help you out with some funds if you do? I mean, it's rather similar to President Obama when he was talking about being pro-European Union, and he was accused of that. So, you know, you can't have the pot calling the kettle black, really, can you? Not very wise of President Trump there. I mean, it's fair enough to criticise the manipulation of the election, but to be sort of offering to reward the public if they vote for Orbán, which is what he's doing there, I don't think that's really such a good idea. On the campaign trail on Saturday, Prime Minister Orbán urged the loud majority to come out to the polls and prevent Hungary from being dragged into war with Russia in Ukraine. Well, it does look as though, as I say, two-thirds or three-quarters of the country did come out to the polls. It's just that they didn't actually vote for Orbán this time. Doing so would risk Hungary's relatively low energy costs, which result from deals negotiated by Budapest to secure access to Russian gas and oil. So he did say to the public, look, if you vote for this opposition guy, you're going to lose your access to the Russian gas and oil because he will support the European Union's sanctions on it. When we have to make difficult decisions, we need people who support us, and we have had much support in recent years. I am grateful that with their encouragement and support, they helped us through these years, Orbán said at a campaign rally. And as I say, unfortunately, he lost. That's how this has come out now. And he's not actually challenging it, because you would imagine he would say, well, look, there was all this meddling that was going on by the European Union. It was picked up upon by America. There was censorship that was involved, all sorts of things. But instead of that, he is he's been a good loser, I would say, to be honest. He's accepted defeat and he's passed the baton on to his opponent. And he's still going to lead the party and he's preparing to fight as the opponent. But, he's been in power for 16 years. The guy really does deserve a rest. And this Magyar, I think he was originally in the Fidesz party anyway, so maybe he's not quite so different to Orbán's policies anyway. We'll just have to wait and see. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.